This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we celebrate the memorable melodies of Grant Kirkhope with an in-tune interview from the man himself, get all nostalgic with a Banjo-Kazooie edition of The Big Ones, and put our hands together, cause we want to clap, for a very Kirkhopean playlist.
What? I don't understand what's going on.
Hello everyone, welcome to the 30th episode of the Overclocked Podcast, the official podcast of Overclocked Remix. I'm Steven, your host, and here with me is co-host Kyle, not Brian. Hey Kyle!
I am Kyle, not Brian. How are you doing, Steven?
I'm doing great. I've noticed that there's a distinct lack of my brother.
Where did that guy go? I've looked everywhere for him. I can't find him anywhere.
So it has been a running joke, as I'm sure you're aware, that one of us gets lost during the Intune interview segment.
Yes.
This time, Brian just got lost for the whole show.
Yeah.
unprofessional.
I don't know where he is.
So we.
I bet I know where he is.
Yeah, where's that?
He's out playing Pokemon Go.
It's so true. He's traveling the country trying to catch a Geodude.
He's just walking all the way. That's where he's going, way across the country.
You had to leave Houston if you want to play Pokemon Go because it's just scorching outside. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't come here where I am, Phoenix. Oh, no. No. Hope he's not here.
I hope not. Well, yeah. He's been Snapchatting me all day. Last I saw, he was in an aquarium in San Francisco. I'm actually not making that up this time.
So. Wow. Well, I wonder what Pokemon he's finding there.
I don't know. A Lapras, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know Pokemon that well. So
oh, that's too bad. Well, I got the Pokemon references, but... Who cares? Yes. Who cares about Pokemon? Who cares about Brian? Kyle's here filling in for Brian while he's on his little trip catching Pokemon or whatever. But this is the Grant Kirkhope episode, not the Pokemon episode.
Right.
We're theming it all about our good friend from the UK, Grant Kirkhope himself. You might know him as the Banjo-Kazooie guy. Hopefully you know him as the Viva Pinata guy, at least. But we've got an interview with him coming up, and that was a lot of fun. We've both met Grant before, right, Kyle?
Right. I've talked to him before on my own show, and he's just a really cool dude. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Speaking of your own show, why don't you give us a little refresher as to what you do on the internet and why you're here?
Well, I am the creator and administrator of the KNGI Network, a network of podcasts dedicated to video game music and culture.
Something I can support.
Right. And I host the show Game Fuel, which is sort of a long form version of the playlist, I suppose, for your listeners who would be like, that sort of gives you sort of an idea. It's more like I give you about an hour and a half worth of music in a 2-hour show.
Uh-huh. Instead of smooshing it down into like 5 minutes.
Right. And it's usually entire songs.
Yeah.
And mainly focused on the remix and remix community.
Great.
And so that's what I do.
Oh, well, thanks for coming and hanging out on our show. But that's not all we have with Grant Kirkhope. We also have a segment from our good friend Matthew Tusseroni, also known as Major Third, coming up. Another episode of The Big Ones, all about Banjo-Kazooie, one of my favorite N64 games, and maybe just one of my favorite games.
It's a great game.
It's a super fun thing. Yeah, you will probably learn at least one new fact about it if you listen to the segment. But before we get to all that, Kyle, I think we better run down the Remix Rewind.
Come jam with Maze Dude as he gives us his spin on Mick Rock from Global Gladiators. His track More Than M-O-N is an homage to Maniacs of Noise, and through the funky synth flares and progtastic expansions on the main theme, Maze Dude gives us a taste of his new Kickstarter project called American Pixels, a showcase of remixes helping to highlight the work of American composers in the VGM field. Check out what he can do, and then consider helping him out with a good cause. We'll be right back.
if you're lucky enough to have come up playing JRPGs in the mid-90s, you'll probably remember the Lufia series with great fondness, as it boasted both amazing music and a deep storyline. So, what happens when you give the memorable Battle Theme 3 from Lufia 2 to the legendary remixer Zircon? A magic freaking spell happens, that's what! Metal labor of love from a super talented true fan of the series is like being handed the real world grown-up manifestation of a favorite childhood toy, like being handed the actual Master Sword or the keys to Voltron. If you can't rock out to searing aggression, then I dare say you can't rock.
An enjoyable face remodeling is the first ever submission from remixer Shibujin, and it's one hell of a great debut. Sourcing Cammy's theme from Street Fighter 2, Shibujin has crafted a high-energy club mix with satisfying snare drum touches that reflects Cammy's military background. It's fast, it's furious, and if you're not careful, it might grab you by the neck with its powerful thighs and throw you down.
For Ave Mountain Breakdown, Doc Nano and Chris Amaterasu's Xenogears mix, I'm going to leave it up to the vivid write-up that Doc himself submitted. Imagine a troupe of musicians riding with a caravan through the desert in a foreign land. It's before dawn, and they've already been traveling for several hours when the blazing sun finally appears over the dunes, revealing a great craggy mountain cradling the bustling city of Ave. This song is their impression of that moment, their first contact with an exotic imperial capital through the lens of their own familiar folk traditions. Remixes and a whole lot more, head over to ocremix.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another InTune interview where we talk to music makers about the music that they make. It's me, Stephen, again, your usual host, and Brian got lost in the woods this time. I think he got lost in Click Clock Wood, actually, which is coincidental, because in this episode, we have Grant Kirkhope with us. Hey, Grant.
Hello. Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for donating a bit of your time to come on the show. I know you've been pretty busy these days.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind. I like doing the odd little chat here and there. I try to, you know, do interviews and stuff with people as much as I can. And usually I'm all right with it, but I have just been like so stupidly busy recently. And I know it's a bit of a lame excuse, but I've never been so busy in my life. It's been this last year or so has been like really, really, really busy. And I don't know why. It just all seems to kind of follow me at once all of a sudden. So it's been a bit of a trek through it all, really.
Yep. Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this before the show. And it sounds like you have really cool stuff going on, though. So I hope it's worth it.
Well, no, it's certainly worth it. Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's sometimes it's funny how everything just kind of drops in your head at the same time.
Yep.
And then something else will come along and just go, can you just squeeze this in? Like when I did Ghostbusters early in the year, maybe like, yeah. I guess, March-ish. They were kind of... saying, can you do it in a month? And I was like, yeah, I think that'll be okay. But, you know, you don't, when you think about saying yes to something, you don't really think about, oh, can I really do it? You know, on top of Ukulele and Drop Zone and the other games that I'm doing and stuff like that. You know, it's a bit like, oh, okay. And, you know, it was all right. Well, it wasn't all right. It was hard. It was a tough, it wasn't hard to do. It was just hard to squeeze it in with everything else and make it good. You know, so it was great fun to do. And the guy that ran the game is Chris Trammell, who I've known for quite a long time. He's a good friend of mine. So, you know, I wanted to help him out because he's a good friend. And so it was great fun to do. Just that I just think it may be, you know, it was I've had such a lot to do. It was a bit of a panic.
Yeah, no, I know. I know what that's like when you take one project too many and then all of the other ones slow down because of that one. But
yeah.
So are you an old school Ghostbusters fan, or?
Oh yeah, I mean, like, I guess I'm old, so like when the first movie came out, it was a revelation. I mean, you know, so a million times, it was a fantastic movie. So yeah, definitely, yeah, great stuff. And like, and the score I've done for that game is more like that original movie score than the stuff that came later. So it's more like that kind of style. It's that kind of sort of, I can't think of the style of it really. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's the style that's in that first movie.
Well, that makes sense. It's always kind of weird going back to an old property and trying to update it with something new that also fits in with what people have heard before.
Yeah.
Kind of treading that line. But I mean, probably, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this is pretty familiar with your work already, but you know, just to rattle some off, Banjo-Kazooie. Viva Pinata. Upcoming Ukulele. There's quite a library there.
I know. I must admit, when I look back on it now, it's a bit like, oh, did I really do all those things? So, it, you know, it's nice to sort of think about it. You've got a bit of history behind you. And it's also good that I'm getting to do new stuff too. So, you know, doing the Civilization games, for instance, was a great little bit of a departure for me to get something very big and epic. And also kind of that Kingdoms of Amalur was also a bit different for me. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was nice to do. I mean, I loved doing Civilization games. That was great. It was just great to write that kind of epic, hopeful, spacey music. It was really good fun to do it. And get to do live orchestra again, which is amazing. You know, so I mean, you know, I've been lucky that I really haven't done anything that I've regretted in my entire career or could have done better. I've been really fortunate.
Yeah, it's and that, like you were saying, the Kingdoms of Amalur, that era was really interesting to me because I had grown up playing, you know, the Banjo-Kazooie games. That's where I first knew you from, as I think a lot of people can relate with. But then when that the like the Xbox 360 sort of era came into view, suddenly there was Viva Pinata and there was Kingdoms of Amalur, and I'm like, this is the same Grant Kirkhope. Like, right. To me, it felt like a big style change. But for you, was that something you'd always been doing yourself anyway, or is that new stuff?
I just think you do what people ask you to do. I think as a games guy, you do get asked to do a ton of different styles. So, mm-hmm. you know, you just get used to writing what people ask for. And I guess I got quite well known for the kind of comedic, broad appeal stuff like Banjo and Donkey Kong, et cetera, and all that kind of stuff that I did before. Mm-hmm. But I also did GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, which were like more serious games.
Yeah.
I think you just people just remember you for the last thing you did almost, really.
Right.
You know, so that becomes the new thing you've just done. I mean, apart from Banjo, I guess Banjo's been with me for my entire career, and I don't mind that at all. It's great. I don't really, if I'm known as a Banjo guy, I really don't care. That's great. I think for any composer mm-hmm. to be remembered for anything at all is amazing. So if that's it, that's it. That's fine by me.
Yeah. That's it. Wait, well, you said you never regretted anything, though.
No, not at all.
But
not,
are you sure? So you, on the record, you didn't regret the DK rap.
Here we go. Till the finally here. Performing for you. If you know the words, you can join in too.
That's no regret. Like, maybe like 40% regret.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Ikarap is, like, at the time, everyone didn't really like it. And, you know, it got a bit of a slagging. But, like, since that, it's kind of taken on a new life, and everyone thinks it's great now. You know?
Yeah.
So it's quite funny that it's kind of come back around full circle. And I kind of like the fact that people like it now. It's good. And I was watching that games, Super Mario. What was it? It was the something in Australia. It was on YouTube. It was they were doing mm-hmm. playing Super Smash Brothers tournament. And the whole audience started singing the DK rap. And, you know, I've got to say, it sort of brought a tear to my eye, because there were all these guys, like probably 300 or 400 people in the room, just started chanting the rap from with all the lyrics from the start. It was fantastic to see it.
That's the kind of beautiful and silly things that happen when you bring a lot of people who like video game music together.
Yeah, it really was. Like, it was ever so nice, and it made me kind of, I said, a little bit of a tear in my eye, actually.
That's
so
awesome. Yeah. And the DK rap also got a bit of a reawakening with the Big Bad Bosses album that came out recently.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know Gerard Cleo, the Completionist, like, we're good friends.
Uh-huh.
We met at Con Bravo in Canada a couple of years ago, and we kind of just became friends, and he called me to say, look, Grant, you know, we're doing this album. Would you like to come do a rap? And I was like, are you joking? Like, I'm the worst rapper in the world, bar none. He's like, no, come on, it'd be great fun. So I just went along to that, and, like, just Jake Kaplan wrote all the music, and he's, like, mm-hmm. a real genius. So he just said to me, like, Grant, say it like this, do it like this, do it like this. And so I just kind of did what he said. And that was really great fun. Probably did it in like an hour. It was great fun to do. And like, you know, it was just, my wife said to me, look, Grant, you know, just don't swear this time. Every time you do these things, you end up cursing all over the place. And my kids are old now. They're like 13 and 10. They start finding things on the internet that I've been, you know, like the Game Grumps thing, like, you know, swearing all the time. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, don't worry, Suzanne. I'm not going to swear. It's going to be like, it's the rap. Of course, you get there. It's like complete swearing all the time. And she asked me, yeah, don't worry, Grant, we're gonna bleep out all the sweary words, you know, make it really like. I said, oh, yeah, fine. And of course, after I did it, he said, yeah, actually, you know, we like the swearing, we're just going to keep it in.
Well, like, hey, to their credit, they did release a clean track as an option.
But not, you know, he never listens to that bit.
Yeah, but that's not the one people actually listen to. No, so, yeah.
I mean, I don't mind. It was good fun to do.
Yeah.
But it's just my wife says to me, oh, Grant, for God's sake, just for once in your life, can you not swear?
What you say on the internet stays forever, Grant. It's something we all must learn.
And I'll tell you what, after the Game Grumps thing, I really learned that, because I really loved doing that. It was great.
Yeah.
And like John and Aaron are really good guys, and I had such a good laugh, just like, you know, having a good laugh with those two. And then I just didn't think about the kind of internet thing. And I guess I didn't think about how big they were. And then it gets like nearly 2 million views or whatever it is now. It's like, oh my God, you know. And then I guess like, you know, like my son's friends, parents, of, you know, I might see my name when I might Google my name and go, oh, look, Mr. Kirkhope, look, let's see what he's been doing. And then,
yep.
Just, oh my God, turn it off, you know. So, you know, another thing happened is like I went to my son's birthday party a couple of years ago. He chose to go to a laser tag just mm-hmm. where we live. And he was wearing his Viva Pinata t-shirt. And we went to a place, and I was supposed to be the adult for the day, like all the other parents dropped the kids off, and I was the guy looking after all the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to be the responsible, serious adult, you know.
Yes, yes.
And then the guy sort of said, oh, yeah, Viva Pinata, I love that game. And, you know, the guy is running it kind of thing. And Max was on, yeah, my dad wrote the music. He goes, what? Grant Kirkhope? He said, yeah, he just stood over there. And so the guy says, God, imagine you're Grant. I was like, yes, I'm Mr. Kirkhope. Yes, very. He said, yeah, he joined Gang Groups. It was awesome. I was like, oh, God, you know, just any kind of credibility I had went straight out the window. Like, it was like, obviously, I couldn't be the responsible adult anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, right.
You immediately changed from a parent to a character. That's right, yeah, in the space of a second.
Yeah, and the guy was like, yeah, Gang Groups was awesome. I was like, oh, right. Mm. You know?
yeah, that's it's funny to see those, like, the generations to start growing up and like things being passed on, like the Game Grumps playing a game that they probably played as kids, and now kids are watching that, and that's their only experience with Banjo-Kazooie or the N64 in general. Yeah. It's that video with you in it.
It's a really weird thing, like, I mean, like, when I think back to, like, when I was younger, like, the TV was the focal point of the house, right? You know, and everyone watched that all the time. Like, my son doesn't watch TV, I mean, at all. I mean, not a single bit. All his content is on YouTube or somewhere else. He isn't interested in watching anything at all on TV. He'll find it somewhere else, whatever that could be. It's so bizarre how it's changed from being it's the main thing to, like, no, it's not. Actually, the internet's the main thing, and he'll watch YouTube for hours on end, in between playing League of Legends, of course, which is, like, very rare. So he just plays that his entire time. But, like, it is weird how it's changed. Like, I've noticed that. It's funny, I've noticed that recently, the last few years, that it just has become that thing where YouTube is a thing that everyone watches and forgets TV.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been absolutely huge. It's been to the point where, you know, us doing podcasts, we start to wonder, do we need to do video content? Is that something that you have to do? Or is there still an audience for just audio? Because
I think there's still a call for that, because people can't watch stuff. They can get on their iPhones and they can listen to it all day long. So I think it's still
important. I think there definitely is. It's just things change quickly.
It's hard to keep up. Yeah, it's like the last few years have been so quick. It's amazing.
Definitely. Well, I mean, speaking of things changing a lot, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Yooka-Laylee. So, I mean, when you were, you know, writing the tunes, and I don't know if you still are working on a music for that game, how natural has it been to go back to that style? Because, you know, people are going to immediately link it to Banjo-Kazooie, obviously.
Yeah.
So has it been, like, easy, or has it given you pause? Like, oh, I haven't done this in a while.
No, it's been all right. It's been good fun. I think that people kind of expect a bit of that sound out of me for that kind of game. So, and I think that maybe after Banjo-2 and DK64, I was probably a little bit kind of platform gamed out at that point, because I've done an awful lot of them on that kind of very friendly sound, you know. So I think I was probably done with Banjo after Banjo-2. I probably had enough of that, really. So I'm kind of glad we didn't do another one straight away.
Yeah.
And then Nuts and Bolts is a bit different. So it's kind of nice to return to that kind of style, because I've done it for a little while. So that kind of umpah, the tritone-y thing, all that stuff's back in there. And trying to add some new stuff that I've learned, hopefully, over the years that have been, you know, since the last game happened. So, it's been, but I've said before that I've been very conscious. I think we've all been very conscious not to just kind of go into autopilot and just, you know, do what we did before. There's no point in doing that. So we're trying to, you know, bring all the kind of warm, feely bits from the past games and bring them up to date with a new game. I mean, just the fact that it's on a new console with new graphics is, like, it's going to look very different. So it's going to look different no matter what. So that's going to be upgraded. So the music has to be the same. So, you know, I've got that. I've got plenty of reference in there to the old stuff. So that should make people smile. That's what I'm just trying to do, you know.
You know, it is kind of like, even though it's the same style of game that Banjo-Kazooie was, with the same style of music in a lot of ways, it's a completely different time, and you have completely different tools at your disposal. So, yeah, I'm sure there are lots of things you could dabble in that you never even got a chance to before.
Yeah, and I think also sometimes I think to myself, I always thought it would be nice to do Banjo 3, and, like, I'm not convinced it would be great. Because they're really well-known characters. You know all the moves already. Like, what would you do with Banjo-Kazooie? Maybe it wouldn't be such a great idea to do it again. How would you change it? Would you go back to scratch? I mean, I had this idea in my little head about Banjo 3, and I kind of thought that, I don't know if you remember a show called Dallas years ago, like an old, it's probably before your time, but Dallas was a big soap opera, you know, it was a huge success around the world, and when I was a kid, it was very big. And there's this famous part of it where one of the guys that died in an early episode, this lady's husband, who was a big star of the show, he died, right? He got written out of the show and died. And so they did the next season without him. It was a bit of a flop because everyone really liked his character.
Right.
So they did an entire season without this guy called Bobby Hewing. And then right at the end of the last episode of that season, the wife's in the shower. Disc wakes up in bed and she goes to the bathroom, and there he is stood in the shower. Right. And she's like, what are you doing here? You died. And then they realized that whole season was a dream. because I wanted to bring him back into the show.
And the classic cop out.
Because it killed him off. They couldn't think of a way to do it. So that was like, she was lying in bed dreaming this entire huge story of this season, which is a really big story. All this thrown out the window and Bobby was back. So I kind of thought, wouldn't it be great if Banjo woke up, you know, and just went, God, because I had a terrible dream about cars and, you know, and things, and, you know, and then it's so
we're all trapped in a computer. It's so confusing.
Yeah, yeah. And then he wakes up and goes, and then Banjo 3 starts from Banjo 2. You know, just after that, what an awful dream. It was all about cars and things, and Grunty was a bit different. And God, and it goes outside, and it's all back to normal. I thought that'd be a great start to Banjo 3.
That's pretty good, because especially the beginning of Nuts and Bolts was such a dreamlike sensation already. Coming back in that way. That's awesome. Yeah. Man, okay, write that down. Put it in a sealed envelope. I'm not airing this episode. We need to keep that one. I like it.
No, I know. Rare's listening. That's how you do it.
Okay, very good. Very good. So let's hop back to the Banjo-Kazooie days for a second. Music was like written into the DNA of that game. It was the collectible, for crying out loud.
Right.
So when did you start on that? Did you come in at the very beginning and influence that? Or was that the idea all along?
No, I was there from the start. So it was Dream first, right? So we did the Dream. So I was there from day one of Banjo-Kazooie. And the first tune for Banjo-Kazooie I actually wrote was, I remember Tim Stamper and Greg Mayles coming to say to me, look, we're changing from Dream to a platformer. And we needed to write, because I've written a lot of music for Dream. Dream was more like RPG, sort of Zelda sort of style. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, we needed to write some platform stuff now. You have to change the palette completely and all, and make it jolly. And that's, I was like, all right. So before the game was even going out, I wrote the Click Clock Woods, that da 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 da. I did that, right? And I just wrote it out of my head. I didn't pitch it for anything at all. I just thought I needed to write a jolly platform tune. So I wrote that, and then it kind of just sat there. And went, oh, yeah, that's the kind of style we're after. And it just sat there. And it wasn't until I got to Click Clock Woods later in the game I thought, this will fit. So I just put that tune onto that level. So it wasn't really written for that level, but I thought it fit really well. So it became that. So I guess I was right from the start, it was going to be, like, all the characters were going to be called musical instruments. Like, you know, Tutti was supposed to be called Piccolo.
Right.
You know, so a lot of the characters were kind of, so Tim wanted to be like, you know, Kazooie and, you know, for Kazoo, Banjo, Bear, etc. So it was very musical all the way through. So it was kind of thought about. But, like, you know, for me, it was my first proper game to myself. So I'd done GoldenEye with Graham Norgay, and I'd done a Game Boy game. This is my first kind of thing by myself, to do the entire game, sound effects and music all by myself. So I wanted to make an impression. So, I just tried my hardest to try and make something that I thought would be good. And, you know, you never know if you're going to do it or not, but it turned out right at the end, you know.
Oh, yeah. And so do you feel like your, like, musical style, or not even just your style, but your creation process has changed a lot since then? Do you still sit down at a keyboard and come up with tunes the same way you used to?
Yeah, I think it's identical. I don't think it's changed. It's completely identical.
Oh, interesting.
I don't. My way of writing is just, I don't think I'm a very, I sometimes say the word intelligent. I don't think I'm a very intelligent composer. I just think I just kind of mess around until I hear something that I like. Uh-huh. And that is what I do. I'll load up a sample. You know, if I'm writing, I'll have an idea in my head maybe, but I just load up a French horn or a clarinet or a bassoon, or I don't know, anything that I think that might be good for the melody. And I'll mess around until I get something that I like, or a set of chords that I like perhaps. You know, I mean, I'll probably go for French horns. I'm looking for chords or a harp because you can hear what's going on, you know.
Right.
Or I'll maybe load up a solo woodwind instrument for a tune to get tunes going. That's the way I kind of do it. But it really is just me messing around until I hear something that I like. I'm not a very clever composer, I don't think.
Well, I think oftentimes the so-called cleverness of composing can kind of get in the way of what makes it fun and pure. Even in my very, very small experience with making music, which has been like 2 months at this point, when I had one instrument set, and, you know, it was just like one little VST pack that I downloaded for free in Reaper, and I was fiddling around with it, I had a ton of fun. I was able to focus on just kind of messing around with the melodies, figuring out what I liked, what didn't, get the rhythm together, and in a couple of hours I had a song that I kind of liked. It was fun. When I downloaded a bunch of them and started thinking, all right, now I've got to actually think about this, and I started thinking about what chords would go well together, then it became very muddied and took a whole lot longer, and the song wasn't as good. So, like, I think everyone just has a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of a two-sided coin here, because, like, you know, I get to write quite a lot of orchestral music. So, you know, I've got big sample libraries that I use. And, you know, and the challenge there is to try and make it sound human, right? So you're trying to put things a little bit out of time, play it not particularly well, so it kind of sounds like human beings that are doing it. So you spend all your time doing that. But you've got quite a limited palette. You've got the woodwind and brass and strings and percussion, right? So you know what's there. You know what the selection is. But when I'm writing, like, electronic music, like for Drop Zone I'm doing right now, that's a kind of combination of, like, a hybrid orchestra synth thing. You're faced with that problem of, like, I need to get a bass sound, and I've got 550 bass sounds or whatever it is, or 5,050 bass sounds to search through. And you keep thinking, I'll just click on the next one, maybe it's better. And you waste your time. Like, you know, you obviously, a lot of most synth stuff's played completely in time, so you don't have to worry about humanizing it. It needs to just sound, over-quantize it. It's completely in time. So that's taken away. But then you've got to worry about, you've got a gazillion sounds to search through to find the one that you might want. And you might end up going back to the first sound that you tried 3 hours ago. You like the best of all, you know. So, the synth stuff has got different problems because I use Omnisphere 2 an awful lot. That's my kind of go-to synth. Like, it's gigantic. It's got like thousands of sounds. You just kind of go, oh my God, I'm just going to search through all these sounds all over again. So you spend another hour looking for the next bass sound, the next pad sound. It's like, oh God, it just never ends, you know.
So when you're doing that kind of process, do you try to sort of perfect or mix and master as you go, or do you just try to get a rough blueprint out there? You don't care how it sounds right now. You just want to get the structure and the melody down.
I think a little bit of both, probably. I do sort of polish it a bit as I go to try and make it sound, you know, so it sounds representative of what it's going to be.
Sure.
So I do a bit of that. I think for me, like, the bit that I like best, right, is writing the chords and the melody. It's my favorite bit always. And the polishing part is a bit that I enjoy the least. Like, some people really like the production part of it. Like, I like Danny Banowski, my friend, loves the production part, and he's great at it. For me, that's not the best bit for me. I'd rather just get somebody else to do that if I can. Although I do it myself nearly all the time. So, you know, you have to get better at that. I think composers these days have to do everything. Like, in the past, you may be the writer and somebody else then takes it away and MIDI-fies it and, you know, and then produces it and then somebody mixes it and masters it and it's all different, right? These days, everyone wants you to do it all yourself. Like, you know, when John Williams was writing E.T., you'd play it on the piano to Steven Spielberg and say, it's going to sound like this with the orchestra. You have to imagine it. You know, you're not going to hear it right now, but believe me, it's going to be great when we get to orchestra. Like, you know, that's a pretty big leap of faith. Like, people wouldn't do that these days. They want to hear a MIDI mock-up that sounds bloody like how it's going to be in the orchestra.
Yeah.
And they want it to be like as good as, you know. So the composer's job's got way harder as the years have gone by because people can make things sound fantastic if you've got the time. But if you're on a deadline getting this stuff done, you haven't got the time to polish it as much as you want to. So you've got that element of, like, do I pay somebody else to do it? Do I
write
it myself? You know, it can get problematic doing stuff like that. So I think that it's definitely got a lot harder these days because people expect it to be all completely done as it is when they get it.
Expectations are really high as far as music quality is concerned right now. It's a good thing because music sounds great, but yeah, there's a lot. I can imagine a lot of pressure being put on someone who's trying to make, especially in some cases when they're not going to get to an orchestra and it's up to them to make it sound like an orchestra just using virtual instruments. I just don't know how people have the patience to go in there and try to, you know, fake the breath of a woodwind or something like that. That's really tough to do.
No, I mean, I know a few guys that are brilliant at it, that are really, really good at doing MIDI mock-ups. And I'm not great at it. I kind of get by. I think I'm getting better, but I think it's a long process that it takes a lot of effort and it takes an awful lot of skill to make it sound amazing. And you have to have like a ton of libraries. I haven't got a ton of libraries. You know, so I think it's a difficult thing. And I think that, you know, the reason why all the Hollywood guys here have got people that do it for them because A, they can afford it, and B, they haven't got the time to do it.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And it makes it a lot easier when you have that luxury. But
yeah.
Well, I won't keep you here forever, Grant, but I absolutely have to talk about Viva Piñata a little bit. That is probably my favorite soundtrack out of all the ones you've written. It's one of those albums that's always looping somewhere in my library.
Right.
So for that one, I'm actually curious about your process for writing that, because you had an orchestra. Which orchestra was it?
City Prague Philharmonic.
Yes, that was it.
Yeah.
So how close did you try to get to that sound when you were just working on your own, and when did you hand it over?
I must admit, because I knew it was going to orchestra, I didn't have to get it that close. And like, because I've been at Rare like a lot of years, people trusted me.
Yeah, so, yeah.
My MIDI mock-ups for that were all right, not great. And at that point, we only really had at Rare the kind of VSL basic orchestral cube thing that was the very first thing that VSL brought out. So it was really big and massive, but not that great quality. Well, good quality, it's not that great kind of, that was what we're looking for, performance-wise. So it was all right. So that's all we had. But people knew it's going to be, I knew it's going to go to live orchestra. So there was no problem about having it not sounding fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think it sounded good enough to give the game good. You know, everyone knew how it was going to be.
Right.
So yeah, so like that. I mean, like, you know, I loved writing that game. I mean, you know, that's my first time I got to go with a live orchestra. It was the first game I did, that first one. So it was just spectacular to get to do it and to write that kind of style of music. I love that kind of. I mean, for me, it's my take on the Elgar Vaughan Williams really classic British English sound, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And that was my attempt to try and be like those superheroes that I can't possibly be as good as. but like, you know, that, so to get to write that music was amazing for me. It was right up my street. I love to write it. I love that style. And so that's why I always sort of say that's kind of my favorite game to write for, really, because I really had a great time doing it.
And it's pretty a pretty fantastic position to be in, where you get to, you know, emulate and then add your own to that style of music. But for a lot of people hearing it, it's their first time even venturing close to that genre, right?
Like, yeah,
it's a kind of an introduction for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get interviewed a few times by people from like classical music stations who say, you know, the debate about is video game music, you know, good enough to be in a classical music station. And I always say, well, I think it certainly is. I think there's a ton of great orchestral music out there that is easily as good as a lot of the stuff that they play on those stations, you know. But I think the kind of classical fan shuts their ears to it because they just can't believe that something could be in a video game that could be as beautiful as like something that you know, they hear from one of the great composers.
Yeah.
And also I think that, you know, I think that a lot of the, I think video games music has reintroduced a whole generation or generations to instrumental music again. Because I think that a lot of times young kids want to listen to pop songs with someone who's singing it, or any kind of song that someone's singing it. And like, I think for a long time, just instrumental music went out of fashion. It wasn't what people listened to. It. I think now, because of video games, and kids listen to, well, not kids, but grown-ups listen to the same tune 5 million times on a level and, you know, and get used to it, it's kind of brought that instrumental thing all back to people. So I think people are way more receptive to that music again. So for me, I remember being at Rare saying, you know, I really think that we could probably push Viva Piñata onto the classical stations because I think it's you know, it's off that genre. It could fit in quite easily. And they were like, oh, no, we're not going to do it. And, you know, I was a bit annoyed that they didn't want to do it, Microsoft especially. But lo and behold, a few years later, that's exactly what happened with Viva Piñata.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it gets put in classical stations all over the place. So, you know, it might make some of the classical fans check out video game music and vice versa, video games guys check out the classical music. So to me, that's a great thing. If I could be included in that little bit of getting people into it, that's fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I had completely forgotten about that avenue, so I'm glad you remember that. But
No, I think it's a, you know, that game. I mean, there's a ton of great orchestral stuff out there that's you know, that people listen to. All the Blizzard stuff's great, Assassin's Creed stuff great. There's tons and tons of great, you know, orchestral music and just instrumental music out there that's in video games. So I think people's opinion are slowly changing. It might take a while, but I think people are getting it.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. Recently, having played through Uncharted 4. Extremely impressive score. I mean, one of the really neat things about that soundtrack is that it was able to sound distinct and even have some melodic hooks in it while delivering that, you know, cinematic action piece kind of soundtrack. So yeah, video games are totally on kind of in that wavelength right now, and it's pretty exciting. Yeah,
I mean, like, you know, and also for me, it's like, I think like my son, you know, makes no distinction between songs he listens to. So he might listen to Undertale tracks and then a track by, I don't know, like he likes YMCA by the Village People.
Right, yeah.
And then he might listen to Metallica. And then he might listen to Lady Gaga. And like, you know, it's a massive difference in styles. And to him, he doesn't make a distinction about what genre it's from. He just knows he likes it.
Yeah.
Like, I think people's music tastes have got way more eclectic these days than they used to be. Like, when I was a kid, right, I was a metal fan. So I listened to metal and nothing else because that was it. I was a metal fan. I listened to, you know, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, and the Scorpions, and Van Halen, and all those bands that I loved. I don't listen to anything else because that's not what I listen to, right? because that's part of the club, right? You know. But I think these days people are far more eclectic and listen to like an Undertale track and maybe a Banjo-Kazooie track and maybe a track by Mozart. You know, it's like I've got a massive taste now, like bits and pieces that they like, and like Magpies. So I think that's great. I think it's the fact that it's expanding people's taste to all sorts of stuff is like great. Like, you know, if I think when I was a kid, if my parents had put on a classical piece in the car, I'd go, oh my God, turn it off. It's just terrible. It's a racket, right? Racket. I don't want to hear this one. It's a rock, you know, where my son doesn't bat an eyelid. If I'm put on Viva Pinata in the car or something else, orchestral or like John Williams or something like Harry Potter, listen to it, not think it's out of the ordinary, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think that for me, I have video games completely to thank for that, because whether it's Viva Pinata having pastoral, you know, classical music, or it's the newest Mario Kart game having like a big band jazz style, like you're going to be introduced to all kinds of genres that then introduce you to, oh, this band actually sounds like this game, and then you learn this band sounds like that band, and slowly you kind of get an overall appreciation for music, not just a style of music or a genre of music. So I think you're spot on with that.
No, I really agree. I think it's a great thing that video games have done to people. I think it's made that instrumental thing happen all over again. So you know, and there's some great tunes out there, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we'll start to wrap things up, Grant. Thanks a lot for dedicating some of your time. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, it's very nice to want to talk to me in the first place. I'm very, very, very grateful.
Oh, of course. I mean, we've been hoping to get you on the Overclock podcast for a while. So, yeah, it's been fun. But before you go, is there anything you want to call out? Any projects that you want people to keep an eye on, or somewhere people can follow you on the social medias?
Yes, I'm on the at Grant Kirkup on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Just got my 50,000 followers, so I'm quite proud of that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't like the word followers really. It sounds a bit like you're some kind of something special, and I'm not special at all. I just think it's a bunch of people who have a bit of a laugh together. You know, I'll get drunk on a night time and tweet out some nonsense, and they'll call me and all the rest of it, and it'll be funny, you know. So I quite like that. I'm on Facebook too. I've got two Facebook pages. One's like my kind of family one. I've got one called Grant Kirkup Composer. That's the one you should follow me on there.
Okay, cool.
But like, you know, I'm all over the place. I'll try to do a few cons if I can. I'll try to get to Magfest again next year, if I can do. You know, so I will say people should check out Drop Zone. Drop Zone is like a game I'm doing right now with the Sparky Pants guys, and it's a real kind of mixture of RTS and MOBA. And it's a really fun 15-minute high-impact match, a bit like an esports thing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Like mech robots that you get inside and like fight, and it's really cool. It's a really super cool game, and I think people should check it out. I think it could be a big hit. I think.
Oh, that's awesome! And that's the electronic soundtrack you're working on, right? Kind of a blend between that, and is there symphonic elements too?
Yeah, bits. But I'd say it's probably more. It kind of started off a bit more orchestra hybrid with their synth. It's kind of got a bit more synth orchestra, I think, now. But I'm writing really high impact stuff. I'm really enjoying it. I haven't done anything like that for a while, so it's good fun to do. But it's a good game, and they're good guys.
Oh, that's really cool. Nice. And yeah, Grant was at Magfest this year, and so were we. So go to Magfest. That is my 100% recommendation. If you come away from anything from this episode, so hopefully you'll see one or both of us there.
And Magfest is like this. I went like years ago because I was a big huge games with the guys that run it, but they were the guys that ran Magfest worked there, so we've got to be friends. Dominic Sacchetti especially, and he, you know, he first invited me there like I guess in 2009 probably, and it was quite big then, but now it's just gigantic. There's like a billion people going out. It's immense.
Yeah, it's a huge teeming mass of really friendly people, oftentimes wearing costumes and always listening to music.
Oh yeah, but like in the concert hall this year, I couldn't get over the amount of people in there. There was thousands of people in there. It was like a proper gig. It was incredible.
But one of the great things is there are also lots of side pockets. So if you just want to hang out with a few friends, go to a really small talk, you know, very focused on what you're interested in, that's there too. It really has kind of everything. So
I mean you know, those guys really 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 believe in video game music, like with an absolute passion, and they started the whole thing off years ago with that idea, just to promote video game music, and I think they had no idea it would get to be so big, but it's just gigantic. I'd like to say there's everything for everybody. It's the smallest thing to the biggest thing. It's all there. Magfest is an awesome place.
All right, well, let's wrap it up then, Grant. Thanks again for coming. Hopefully we'll have you on the show again in the future, perhaps when you have less projects circling around your head.
I'm happy to be asked anytime you want. Just give me a shout.
All right, sounds great. And for now, we will bring you guys back to the show.
Welcome to The Big Ones, a look at popular game music and what makes it so loved. Today is all about the 1998 Rare classic, Banjo-Kazooie. Banjo-Kazooie is goofy. It's also slightly dark and occasionally spooky. In fact, as a kid, the game over screen downright frightened me. But more than anything, this bright and silly platformer showed the capabilities of the N64 both in gameplay and in music. Now, the N64's sound capabilities are hard to explain and hard to understand. It didn't have a sound card in the same way the SNES did, so the sound capabilities really depended on who was making the game. Nintendo would give an instrument sample set to developers, and you can hear similarities among several different titles. But the music was usually an afterthought, as everyone in the game industry was focused first and foremost on the graphics. In fact, in areas of certain games where the processor was pushed to its limits, there would be limited or no sound. But despite these severe limitations, there are developers that created memorable and delightful music that stands the test of time. Nintendo themselves, of course, did this, but among third-party developers, Rare arguably put in the most effort to create amazing soundtracks. The main Rare composer on the N64 was Grant Kirkhope, and Banjo-Kazooie is probably his crowning achievement. I'd sum up Banjo-Kazooie's music in two words: seriously silly. The music is bouncy and irreverent, but it has so much heart and effort put into it that it seems wrong to just label it all as silly. Almost every track features an oompa rhythm, meaning its bass line sounds like a person saying oompa oompa. This pattern is associated mainly with polka music, so the silliness runs deep. Tracks like Mumbo's Mountain are pure goofy, with constant tritones and buzzing horns all around. The melody gets passed between a kind of clarinet sound, a xylophone, a banjo, and I guess a tuba. Banjos and tubas are goofy in and of themselves, but a single piece of music with all these different instruments together make for a truly kooky track. Many of the other pieces from the game are trying to riff off a certain style of music, like Freeze Easy Peak, which sounds right out of a children's Christmas special. Tip for composers out there: if you want your song to sound like Christmas, just add jingle bells. My favorite track from the game, though, is easily Click Clock Wood. The melody sometimes just jumps into my head and usually makes my day better. It's such a simple and repeated melody that just gets built upon and elaborated throughout the level. It's jazzy in the oldest sense of jazz. In fact, with the right instrumentation and arrangement, the song would feel right at home on the streets of New Orleans during Mardi Gras. But the best part of Banjo-Kazooie's soundtrack, in my opinion, is the dynamic music system. A few years back, Grant Kirkhope released an album called Banjo-Kazooie: Everything and the Kitchen Sink, and it literally has every music track and jingle from the game, plus a few unused tracks. This includes every variation of every theme from every level. Therefore, we can look at the different parts that all come together and create the tapestry of sound apparent in each level. But for today, let's look at one level, Mad Monster Mansion. This whole level is inspired by Halloween and old B-horror movies, and that's reflected in the music. But there's actually 8 tracks that play in Mad Monster Mansion, depending on where you are or what you're doing in the level. There's the main theme. But when you get near the church, you hear the church bells. When you go underwater, you hear a simpler, calmer, and softer version. When When you walk inside the mansion, you hear the theme in a style that I can only describe as Scooby-Doo. When you go into the toilet, you hear a version that, well, listen to it. When you enter the graveyard, there's a version that's much more sparse and ambient. When you go into the church, there's an organ-driven version. And there's a section where you have to spell out a word on a Ouija board, and this area gets its own theme as well. What's more, every level in the game has at least four variations on a main theme. And I didn't even mention the overworld, which could be an episode all its own. The already catchy melodies get driven deeper and deeper into your head as you hear several different variations. Banjo-Kazooie is easily among the most influential 3D platformers, and the music matches the look and feel of the game perfectly. It's silly but well-constructed, goofy but polished, and old but timeless. Thanks for listening, and listen well.
And bam, that was the show. It went so fast.
Yeah.
Good times with our old friend Grant Kirkup. We haven't heard the last of our Grant Kirkup music from this episode, but we're about to hear the last from us. Kyle, thank you so much for co-hosting today.
No problem. Thank you for having me on. It's been awesome.
Well,
as always.
It was lovely to have you here. I continue to get Snapchats from Brian as he explores the fog and catches Pokemons in South San Francisco or wherever he is. But until then, everyone, Kyle, where can people learn more about this fine collection of remixers?
If you'd like to find out more about Overclocked Remix, head on over to ocremix.org.
Yep, that's the place to go. And if you want to get in touch with us specifically, Twitter is a great place to do that. We're OCR Podcast over there.
And of course, you can always email Steven and or Brian using the email podcast@ocremix.org.
And if you want to email Kyle, don't use that, but I guess we could always get the message to him.
Sure.
And if you want to learn more about the network Whales or Whales in general, that's the collection of podcasts and little creative dabbles we do with our friends. You can go to whalesorwhales.com, learn more about it there. We'll see you guys next week, and it's time for the playlist.
The Playlist is a weekly collection of recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is Grant Kirkhope. Bears and Birds Radio Edit from Big Bad Bosses and submitted by Phoenix Down.
If you ever had an N64, you probably have an inkling what lies in store. This crazy dude agreed to say all these words. Like bears and birds.
Cause I don't give a fuck.
I'm Grant Kirkhope.
I don't rely on luck.
Cause my work dope.
You better shake that.
I'm like the twerk woe.
Just make it rain now.
I'm Grant Kirkhope.
Welcome to the 20 to the 15. Got pixels on a 1,000 TV screens. 50 on 50 video games streams. You're at the end screen. Know what that means?
All you haters can write off. We've got more cash than Microsoft. I got no lyrics, chilling for a while, and we're back now to change that style.
Dalentarth. from Kingdoms of Amalur and submitted by Matthew Tusseroni.
Gargos theme from Killer Instinct 2 and submitted by Square Evil.
Fresh Day from Viva Pinata Trouble in Paradise and submitted by Lion Tamer.
Chicago Stealth from Perfect Dark, submitted by the M-Disc Playlist Podcast.
Thank you.
K-Rap from Donkey Kong 64 and submitted by Jean-Marc Griffin.
If you know the words, you can join in too. Put your hands together if you want to clap as we chase you through this monkey rap.
Aquilian from Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide and submitted by Grant Kirkhope.
From Yaiba Ninja Gaiden Z, submitted by me.
Village from Banjo-Tooie and submitted by me.
Mm-hmm. Listening to the Overclock Podcast. Next week's playlist is American music. We'll be talking to Maze Dude about his Kickstarter album, American Pixels, so find some music made in the USA. To submit your suggestions,
or just say howdy,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast, email us at podcast@ocremix.org, or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom:
grabbed by the ghoulies. Grabbed by the ghoulies. Grabbed by the ghoulies. Grabbed by the ghoulies.
You know, it was really fun having, someone other than Brian here, because, man, I hate Brian.
Oh, man, yeah, me too. I hate that guy.
Oh, we need to get this out of our system.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh, wait, I'm still recording.
Yeah, so am I. Whoops.